If you would turn to Galatians chapter 5, our scripture reading this morning is going to come from verses 13 through 17. For you are called to freedom, brothers. Only do not use your freedom as an opportunity for the flesh, but through love serve one another. For the whole law is fulfilled in one word. You shall love your neighbor as yourself. But if you bite and devour one another, watch out that you are not consumed by one another. But I say, walk by the Spirit, and you will not gratify the desires of the flesh. For the desires of the flesh are against the Spirit, and the desires of the Spirit are against the flesh. For these are opposed to each other, to keep you from doing the things you want to do.
Well, it's very good to see everybody here today. If you're meeting with us for the very first time, then please fill out a visitor's card, talk to any one of our members about the work that we do here, and give us an opportunity to get to know you a little bit after our worship service. It's very encouraging to have you here today. All we want to do is to glorify God. We want to worship Him. We want to praise Him. We want to understand and behave in a way that reflects His will. So a couple weeks ago, I did a first part to this series. It's just going to be just a two-parter. So this is the conclusion of this series that I'm going to be doing. But it's called Life in the Mirror. And if you weren't able to hear it, then please look it up on our website. We've got the audio and the PowerPoint slides available on there. It's called Life in the Mirror. And it kind of focuses on the idea of self-obsession. When we make life about myself. When it is all about how I look to other people, how I appear to other people. Do I look successful? Do I look rich? Do I look sexy? Do I look fill in the blank? And it's just all about, can life be about God? Can life be about the people around us? And so that was sort of a foundation upon which we can build some ideas in today's lesson on the subject of modesty. And I hope that this will be, I don't know if fresh take is maybe the right word for it, because truths that have been around for thousands of years really don't ever need to be called fresh because they're always fresh. But maybe there'll be some things that we talk about in this lesson, or maybe I can put them in a way that can appeal to you, that can be reasonable to you. If ever there has been a subject that has divided Christians unnecessarily, I think the subject of modesty is probably right up there near the top of the list. So let's kind of begin where we left off and start with this in Romans 12, verse 2. This sort of picks up where we left off in part 1. In Romans 12, verse 2, it says, "Do not be conformed to this world, but be transformed by the renewing of your mind, that you may prove what the will of God is, that which is good and acceptable and perfect." There's always a temptation for us to focus our energy on fighting only the outward manifestation of immodesty. We tend to believe that modesty is a fight that happens on the outside, that it's only something that's without, never within. And as long as we might be able to force the people around us to keep their shorts a certain length or their skirts a certain way or to wear the kind of earrings and jewelry that seem to be in keeping with a simple and modest life, then we've made people modest. But modesty is not just about what's going on the outside. Modesty has to be something that emanates from the inside out. And somebody might be in some technical outward conformity with a standard of modesty that meets your approval, but if the heart has not been changed, they're no closer to God. They're no closer to Jesus Christ. I like the way one writer put it. He said that the modesty is not just about the outside. It's the orderly. It's the well-arranged. It's the decent and good behavior of a person. The well-ordering is not of dress and demeanor only, but of the inner life, uttering indeed and expressing itself in the outward conversation. The Apostle Peter makes the same point in 1 Peter chapter 3, verses 3 and 4, where he writes there, "Let not your adornment be merely external." Now, he is clear about that. Your adornment is external. There is something to be said about how you look on the outside, but the emphasis is on, let it not be merely external. Don't put all of the focus on just what's happening in your clothes, in your hair, in your jewelry, in the outward presentation. Let it not be merely external, the braiding of hair and wearing jewelry or putting on dresses, but let it be the hidden person of the heart with the imperishable quality of a gentle and quiet spirit, which is precious in the sight of God. The outward manifestation is not that which is precious, but a heart that is turned fully toward God. That is the thing that's precious. A modest person is able to adorn him or herself by meek and discreet behavior and not merely with physical appearance, because physical appearance passes away. Proverbs 31, verse 30 says, "Charm is deceitful and beauty is passing, but a woman, and yes, a man also, don't forget that, who fears the Lord shall be praised." Well, let's consider a passage here in 1 Timothy 2 and verse 9. Notice 1 Timothy 2 and verse 9 says, "Likewise, I want women to adorn themselves with proper clothing, modestly and discreetly, not with braided hair and gold or pearls or costly garments." And, you know, let's be clear about something here. It's not just clothing that's the issue. And it's not really the question of too little clothing. I mean, that's not the issue here that Paul's discussing. It's not too little clothing. Actually, for Paul, it's too much clothing. When the clothing becomes the person, when the clothing becomes this great presentation about who you are and your wealth and your status, and expensive clothes are as bad as too little clothes. And the hair and the wear that you wear it, or the way that you wear it. And he says here, the braiding of hair and gold or pearls or costly garments. You know, it's interesting in the language there in the Greek, the not braided with hair and gold, that's one clause within the language. So it's not braiding hair, because that would mean every high school softball team ever just violated 1 Timothy 2 and verse 9. It's not about braiding of hair. In fact, the clause that's being discussed there in the Greek is the braiding of hair and gold. So it's the idea of actually taking strands of gold and weaving or braiding the gold into your hair. It's a showy thing. It's the idea of, I'm so rich, I am so wealthy, that I am literally taking strands of gold and braiding my hair with gold. I mean, that's how far people can take it sometimes, though. And so it wasn't out of the realm of possibility for Paul to be saying there are literally people weaving gold into their hairstyle. And that's a problem. When you've got that much wealth and you decide to flaunt it like that, being wealthy is not the problem, by the way. It's the flaunting of the wealth. It's the showing off of the wealth. Now, let's be really clear about something. People can look beautiful, and it's not a sin to be beautiful. And people can wear expensive clothes, and it's not necessarily a sin to wear expensive clothes. It's not necessarily a sin to be wealthy. It's not a sin to be beautiful, to look nice, and to care about your appearance. And in our lesson from a couple weeks ago, I presented several examples from the Bible that show that. First of all, you can look at the story of the prodigal son in Luke chapter 15. When the prodigal son came home from his sinful life, he came back to the father. And what does the father do for that son but to put expensive clothes and a gold ring on him? And so if it's a sin for us to wear expensive clothes and gold jewelry, then the prodigal son's dad sinned by putting expensive clothes and jewelry on him. It's not a sin to look nice, because Naomi, Ruth's mother-in-law, when Ruth was going to go to Boaz to suggest to him a union between the two of them, Naomi's idea is, well, make sure you bathe and put your best clothes on and smell nice for him. And there was nothing wrong with that. That's never presented as anything but a good idea in the story of Ruth. And there's other examples as well. There's other examples as well from the Bible. And you can look up again from our lesson a couple weeks ago from some of those examples. But looking nice, smelling nice, wearing nice clothes, those things are not inherently or necessarily wrong. The issue in 1 Timothy 2 verse 9 is, when you put the emphasis on how you look to the detriment of what's going on the inside. And when you spend all of your time looking at yourself in the mirror going, I'm beautiful, I'm sexy, I'm wealthy, I'm successful, I'm desirable, you're putting the emphasis in the wrong place. And I think you're missing what you're really supposed to be in life. It really kind of boils down to, do you want to be the center of attention? Do you want to be the center of attention? Because one can be fully clothed. One can look in a technical sense like a modest person. But when you make your life the center of attention, when it is all about you, when it's all about what do people think about me? What do people see in me? The presentation of myself as I go out the door. That is where the real issue comes in. You know, in 1 Timothy 2, verse 9, it talks about the expensive clothes and all that. But then in verse 10, the very next verse there, 1 Timothy 2, verse 10, but rather by means of what? Of good works. You notice the prescription. When you are obsessed with expensive clothes and braiding your hair with gold, the prescription is not to put on a sack, right? Paul's prescription is not, instead of doing that, put on a burlap sack and let your hair get matted and nasty. That's not the prescription that he offers for the verse 9 problem. The prescription he offers in verse 10 is to think about what you are being as a person, what you are doing with the opportunities given to you. How are you living in the light of God's will? That is the prescription for it. Because a person who loves God, a person who wants to live in the light of His will and do good works, well, that person is going to dress in a way that's reflective of that. And while nobody would argue that Paul would approve of revealing clothes, his main point is to educate Christians about the attention, not necessarily of revealing clothes, but of attention-grabbing clothes. Now, maybe that manifests itself in revealing clothing in many cases. You're trying to grab the attention by having as little clothing on as possible. But maybe you're trying to grab the attention by wearing as much clothing as possible and to show how expensive it is, to show how wealthy you are. And maybe you're just trying to grab the attention by the kind of clothing that you're wearing, or the way that your hair is presented, or the way that your body's presented. It's not about what you're wearing necessarily. It's about how you're presenting yourself to the rest of the world. And it can come in many forms, whether it be the low-cut dress or sexual innuendo printed on a t-shirt. The problem that's addressed in the New Testament is a person's tendency to flaunt those things. Let me make a statement that at first is going to seem rather bold. That's not about the mohawk, by the way, because he is doing it wrong. But I want to make a statement that at first might seem to be a very bold thing to be saying, but I think has a lot of truth to it, that you are what you wear. You are what you wear. Now, hold on a sec. Ryan, you saying it's okay for people to judge you? What if you don't have nice clothes? What if you're not wealthy? You're saying it's okay for people to judge a book by its cover. No, that's not what I'm saying. It is not right for other people to judge you based on your appearances, okay? It is absolutely on that person. If there's another person judging you entirely based on your appearance, that is on that person, and that's not right. It is not right to judge another person based on appearances. I want to make sure that's very clear. But I think there's a lot of truth to the idea that we often, if not almost always, present ourselves to the world exactly the way we want to be judged. Let me say that again. Almost always, we present ourselves to the world exactly the way we want to be judged. Now, if you're a fan of a sports team, okay, love the Memphis Grizzlies, and it's game day, it's Saturday, it's time to go out to the Liberty Bowl, and you put on a Memphis Grizzlies, Memphis Tigers, wow, that was all supposed to be queued up. Let's start over again. Let's say you know what you're doing on a Saturday, and you're watching the Oregon Ducks playing football. I'm sorry, Tennessee fans can be all bitter if they want to. But let's say you got a favorite sports team and you put on a jersey. What are you saying to the world by wearing that jersey? You're saying you're a fan. And when somebody says, oh, I see you're a Ducks fan or a Tigers fan or a Grizzlies fan, you can't get mad when they make that assumption, right? Because if you're wearing the jersey, what are you saying to the world? You are telling the world, I'm a fan of this sports team. You're dressing exactly the way you want to be judged. And you know what? If you're an Auburn fan, you're not going to be wearing an Alabama jersey or vice versa because it's giving the wrong impression about you. You are what you wear in the sense of we make choices about the clothes that we wear. And we wear exactly what we want to wear. We want to present to the world a message about who we are. And again, more often than not, we wear clothes that are in keeping with exactly how we want to be judged. And that's not always a bad thing. Again, in the context of sports or trying to look successful in the business realm, you know, you show up for an interview, you're going to look a certain way because when you want to be successful, what do they always say? Say, dress for success. That's not necessarily a bad thing. That's not necessarily a bad thing. But can it become a very bad thing? Absolutely. I'll tell you what. If you want people to think that you're scary, you're going to dress in a way that's scary. I mean, that's just how it is, right? And I guess to the person who dresses in a scary way, and if just fill in the blank, whatever's scary to you, okay? I'm not going to get too specific about that. But if you dress in a way that frightens or intimidates or scares the people around you, I'm sorry, but don't be shocked when people are scared of you. Don't be shocked by that because you made a choice. And if you want, and if you dress like a hipster and you go to a coffee shop and you're typing on a typewriter in skinny jeans and thick rimmed glasses and someone calls you a hipster, like don't be shocked by that. Right? Don't be shocked by that. And you know what? If you present yourself as an object of sexual desire, do not be shocked when people objectify you. Because you dressed exactly the way that you wanted to be judged. Now again, I want to make it absolutely clear, it is not right for other people to judge you based on appearances. That is not right. But when we make choices about how we present ourselves to the world and then act all shocked because people judge us exactly the way we chose to present ourselves, that part of the equation is on us. That part of it we are responsible for. And there's two interesting verses from the Bible that I think illustrate this. In Genesis 38 and verse 15, we find a man named Judah and his daughter-in-law, Tamar, and she dressed as a harlot. Now, she wasn't a harlot, but the text says that she dressed as a harlot. Proverbs chapter 7, verse 10 says the same thing, and behold, a woman comes to meet him dressed as a harlot and cunning of heart. Now, she wasn't a harlot, at least not a professional prostitute or anything. In Proverbs 7, she's a married woman. But she dressed as a harlot. She gave an impression. She dressed in a way that was in keeping with the behavior that she was ready and willing to do. And in both of these scriptures, the woman in question is not actually a harlot, but her clothes become a reflection of sinful behavior. Again, similarly, many people become upset when they're judged for wearing, you know, whether it be frightening clothing. I mean, if you want to dress a certain way and look scary and frightening, don't be shocked when people are scared of you. And if you're going to wear biker boots and a leather vest, don't be surprised when people are intimidated by you. And if you're going to dress in a way that's sexy and seductive, don't be surprised when people treat you in a way that's in keeping with that dress. Well, I'm just trying to express myself, people might say, but that's exactly my point. You're trying to express yourself, and people are going to judge you in the way that you choose to express yourself. Now, that part of the equation is on us. Take a look at 2 Corinthians chapter 1, verse 12. 2 Corinthians chapter 1, verse 12 says, "For our proud confidence is this, the testimony of our conscience, that in holiness and godly sincerity, not in fleshly wisdom, but in the grace of God, we've conducted ourselves in the world, and especially toward you. Notice the use of the word sincerity here. That we have conducted ourselves in holiness and godly sincerity. Paul and his companions always consider themselves as acting in meekness and modesty, not just in actions toward the world, but always in a sense of sincerity in their heart, as if they truly meant what they said, as if they always meant what they did. Now, for us, our modesty should always be just as genuine and never out of compulsion, but out of a sincere desire to please God and not lead our fellow people into sin. You know, we don't always think about how strongly our actions can negatively affect those around us. In fact, when most people think about how modest or immodest they are, they consider it in terms of how they see themselves. The title of this two-part series is Life in the Mirror. And when you walk out the door and you look at yourself in the mirror, a lot of times we only see ourselves in terms of our own reflection, right? I look at myself and go, well, that looks good, or that looks fine, or that's not a problem, or that's modest, or that's successful, or that's reasonable. And so it's always judged in terms of how I see myself. But it's not just our own eyes that we need to be concerned about. It's other people's eyes as well. I like in 1 Corinthians 4 and verse 4. 1 Corinthians 4 verse 4, the Apostle Paul says, I am conscious of nothing against myself, yet I'm not by this acquitted. And I know that sort of takes it out of a broader context that he's talking about there in chapter 4. But I think there's a little point there that can be made. Even just that verse in isolation, the idea of just because I'm not aware of how I impact other people around me doesn't mean I'm acquitted of that. Just because I'm not aware that I might be a stumbling block to somebody else doesn't mean that it's okay for me to go on doing that. In Paul's own eyes, he was unaware of transgression in his life, but just because he was unaware of it doesn't mean he wasn't accountable to it. And I think in the same way, we need to think about our dress, our clothing, our appearance, our persona, right? The persona that we're trying to give to the world. Because we have to be something more than our persona. We have to be more than our clothes, more than our hair, more than our physical bodies. There has to be a substance and a sincerity to what we are, and not just be something. You know, a building is more than a facade. It has to have something inside of it. A house really is just a building unless it has a family living in it. And this is just a building unless it has a church dwelling in it and worshiping in it. And a body is just a body unless it's filled with a sincerity. And that body is destined for destruction. That body is destined for old age. That body is destined for decay. It has a soul inside of it that needs to be focused on God and holiness. 1 Timothy 16 and verse 7, in that great story about Samuel being called by God to go find a new king for Israel. He looks at all these sons of Jesse, and God reminds him in 1 Samuel 16 that the Lord doesn't see people the way that we see them. For God sees not as man sees, for man looks at the outward appearance, but the Lord looks at the heart. And I suppose it would be true that there could be someone who is dressed in a technically modest way, but to have a very immodest heart. If you think highly of yourself, you're immodest. If you think you're the center of the world, you're immodest. If you think you're above anybody else, you're immodest. We always need to think about that. Too often we want to force modesty on the people around us by pushing an exact definition of modesty. And yet if we don't change somebody's heart, it doesn't matter. Now, I say that, it doesn't matter. Now, we might be able to pat ourselves on the back a little bit and say, well, at least I prevented a stumbling block from being out there. I made somebody come into conformity with a certain standard or set of expectations, and I might have prevented that from being a stumbling block to another person. But if somebody is not inwardly focused on God, they are not any closer to God, no matter what they're wearing, no matter how they are presented. We need to look at a passage like Titus chapter 2. Okay, go to Titus chapter 2. And it says there in Titus chapter 2, verses 11 and 12, Paul writes, "For the grace of God has appeared, bringing salvation to all men, instructing us to deny ungodliness and worldly desires, and to live sensibly, righteously, and godly in the present age." That, to me, that's what a really transformed life looks like. Now, is that going to manifest itself in an outward appearance? Yeah, it had better. I mean, you look at any other sin, and we would expect outward manifestation, right? We would expect the heart turned toward God would manifest itself in every other way. With every other kind of sin and every other kind of temptation. So you would expect that a heart that is turned toward God outwardly is going to show itself in clothing that is reflective of that holiness. But if we don't ever change the heart, it doesn't matter what a person wears. It doesn't matter. And even if we can claim to have some freedom in Christ, we need to make sure that we use that freedom to build up others through love. Our scripture reading earlier in our worship came from Galatians chapter 5, verses 13 through 17. It's such a marvelous passage of what's really motivating you. Because the whole law can be summed up in a very simple phrase, love your neighbor as yourself. But if you bite and devour one another, if you tear each other down, if you take the opportunity to just tear each other down, nobody ever gets any closer to God. We just feel torn down. We just feel broken down by our brothers and sisters in Christ. I think there's a really good anecdote. I might have said this in the past, maybe to some of you. I don't think I've ever said it in a lesson here at East Shelby. But Rebecca and I recalled a story from Tucson where I think with the very best of intentions, I don't doubt motive, but there was a young woman at a congregation in Tucson, Arizona, who, a very modest young woman, loved the Lord very much, and truly, I believe, with the best of intentions. There was a visitor that came in one day. She was the sister of a member. That member had just been converted, and she was hoping that her sister would hear the gospel also. Just really desperate to hear her younger sister come and be exposed to the gospel. So she brought her sister in, and this sister wore what she believed was appropriate for church. By any worldly standard, she thought it was appropriate for what she could wear to church. A skin-tight dress. It was way too short, but she was there. Now, this young woman with a heart that, I believe was with the best of intentions, came up to this visitor, this young woman in the skimpy dress, and she said, "We're so glad you're here, but the next time you come, we need to make sure that you wear something way different than that." And you know what? She never came back again. Never visited again. I understand the challenge, right? There's a challenge because we want to stand up for something that we believe is right, right? When we are convicted concerning sin, when we are convinced that there is something that we ought to look and appear and dress and behave and act in a certain way that's reflective of God, yes. And we don't want stumbling blocks. And I get that. That's one concern that is a very valid concern, but at the same time, you got to get people like with just their foot in the door first. Somebody is not going to be able to receive the message of don't come back until you get a longer dress until maybe first you can kind of crack the door of their heart. I know. So these are very difficult things to try and balance, but maybe balance is just the right term that we need to find for it. Now, I only offer that as one anecdote, okay? I know that that's not true of every situation, and we all have anecdotes that we can come up with where we can say, well, what about this and what about that? What about this situation that comes up? We don't have time to sit and talk about every kind of anecdote that comes up. I just want you to walk away understanding that we need to make an appeal to people's hearts, an appeal for holiness, an appeal for sanctity, an appeal for salvation. And when somebody has met Jesus Christ at the cross, there is no sin that they won't be willing to lay before that cross. When their hearts have been pricked, when their minds and their hearts have been changed by the message of the gospel, you know what they'll say? They'll say anything for Christ. If this is what it takes to show holiness, if this is what it takes to live in conformity with the will of God, anything for Christ. But when you get people to that point where they'll say anything for Christ, I think they mean it. But until they know Christ, all you're asking them to do is change their outfit. God is the one who will beautify us. So it's not about the clothes we wear or how we look or our hair and that sort of thing. I'll tell you what, it takes a great deal of self-discipline and self-examination to deal with immodesty in our lives. To get to the root of it, right? To get to the heart of the issue. So how do we deal with it? This is our last point that we'll make this morning. How do we deal with it? How do we make ourselves want to be modest? How do you get to that heart issue? Well, it's about priorities. I like Proverbs 9, verse 10. Proverbs 9, verse 10 says, "The fear of the Lord is the beginning of wisdom, and knowledge of the Holy One is understanding." And when all of these kinds of conversations start with God first, when it begins with Jesus Christ, everything else becomes secondary to that. Now, whether that's a really tough Bible study that you got to have on marriage, divorce, and remarriage, or a really difficult Bible study on baptism, or you're dealing with a chronic or habitual sin in somebody's life, like pornography, when the conversation starts with, can we all agree that we need to fear the Lord and that knowledge of the Holy One is the beginning? Everything else kind of falls into line after that. All that other stuff deals with itself eventually if you can start with the fear of the Lord. As Christians, we have a great obligation to be pure and to be undefiled. In our motives, in everything that we do as a result of our motives, we should be in line with pleasing God first and foremost. Never to please each other merely. And certainly, not to just please ourselves. And naturally, if we keep God first in our lives, we will want nothing else but to live modestly. Not just in the clothes we wear, but truly, modestly. You know what the word modesty means? You look it up in the dictionary, modesty is not about clothes. That's not what the word modesty means. When somebody says, "Oh, you're just being modest. He's such a modest person." We're not talking about clothes. Modesty is a humble heart. A heart that loves its neighbor more than itself. A heart that practices agape love and sees other people as being so far ahead and God above even them. And when you give your heart over to God and stop worrying about how do I look? Do I look sexy or successful? Do I look scary or intimidating? You know who will beautify that? God will. Psalm 149, verse 4 says, "For the Lord takes pleasure in his people. He will beautify the humble," or the modest, "with salvation." And that's an outfit that I really want to wear more than anything else. If you have any spiritual need at all, will you please let this congregation know about that? Please come forward as we stand and sing.